doesn't it seem like we always have that person, or unfortunately sometimes people in our life that for whatever the reason don't extend us the same amount of grace as we see them extending the other people around them? Maybe they're just less patient with us than they are with other people. Maybe they're just less forgiving of us than they are of other people. And that's hard. That's a hard thing to deal with. It's hard to be felt treated different. It's hard to be felt like you're held to a higher standard. It's hard to be forgiven less and to be shown less grace by someone. But then you turn that on its head and you start thinking about, because the reality is, in each and every one of our lives, there is that person or those people that we show less grace to. That for whatever reason, we have less patience with them. We have less understanding when they mess up. We have less grace to give certain people. It was not by design. And putting this message together was an extremely humbling experience for me. Because I sat with Cliff a couple of weeks ago going through the passage that we're going to be talking about in Acts this morning. It was about second chances, and it was the idea of grace. And I came to the conclusion and was confronted with the fact that that person in my life is my mother. The person that I show the least amount of grace is my mother. The person in my life that I have the least amount of patience with. The person that I feel like I have caused the most pain is my mother. Then I realized I'm doing this message on Mother's Day. And I had to have a couple really hard conversations with my mother before I could stand before you and even begin to talk about this passage. And I don't know why. I don't know why our relationship has always been so strained. Maybe it's because I'm afraid that she can hurt me like no one else can hurt me. Maybe it's because selfishly I feel like I just deserve more from her than I get. I don't know. But I had to have a couple of really hard conversations with my mother. And I had a great many things to apologize for. Because the reality is, I have treated her in such a way and I have said things that if I saw someone else speak to their mother in the way that I have, I'd have slugged them, maybe, metaphorically. It was an incredibly humbling experience to come before this passage and to recognize in my own life on Mother's Day where God was doing business with me. We're going to be covering the passage at the end of chapter 15 in Acts. It's verses 36 through chapter 6 and verse 5. If you want to turn there, we're going to... So chapter 15, verse 36. And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are." I want to stop for just a second, because what they're saying is they want to go back to all of the cities that they visited on that first missions trip and see how everybody is. They want to visit those fledgling churches. They want to visit those new converts to Christianity, and they want to go from city to city and see how everybody is doing. Now, if you've ever been on a missions trip, you know exactly how this feels. If you've ever helped out with VBS, you know exactly how this feels, because the reality is you make connections with people, and it is impossible not to wonder how they're doing. Not to wonder how that little boy that had never been to church and showed up with his cousin on VBS day and accepted Christ. Not to wonder what he's doing today. One of those strongest experiences for me was actually, I've been on several mission trips now, but my very first one was to Dominican Republic, and we were staying in the bush in a little tiny village called Hato Mayor. We were living in an orphanage with orphans. Like it was a huge bunk hall, and we were in some of the bunks, and the orphans were in the rest of the bunks, and it was an unbelievable experience. And there's a ton of memories, but I only remember one person, and her name was Luce. And she was this little, like 6 or 7 year old girl. And it's just one of those kids that she was other. You know, there were hundreds of kids that would come out when we would do the VBS, and they were very excited to meet the Americans, and they were very excited to hear the stories, and they were very excited to get the candy and the little trinkets that we brought. And that was okay. That's what we went for. We wanted to get them excited and to tell them Bible stories. But little Lou, she was excited about Jesus. I mean, all the other stuff, the crafts and the goodies and the stuff that we did for them, that was bonus. She just really wanted to hear more about Jesus. She just really wanted to hear more about the Bible. And she was smart. She didn't know a lick of English, but throughout the week, she actually became kind of an interpreter for us. She was so good. And even just as we tried to explain things in English, she was so good at catching on and just understanding what you were saying that she could relay it to the other kids and even adults. And she had a special spot in my heart. And I've thought about her 1,000 times. And I've wondered if she stayed as passionate about God and as passionate about Jesus as she was as that little girl. And I wonder what impact she's having on the world. This little girl that lived in a mud and stick hut in a third world country in Dominican Republic, whose father she'd never met, she was on fire for Jesus. I've always wondered how she's doing today. What is she doing for the kingdom? What amazing stories has her life told? If you've ever been on a missions trip, if you've ever taught children even, you can relate to this. It's impossible not to wonder how they are. And so we see Paul and Barnabas wondering how these baby churches are doing and wondering how these awesome believers and these new converts were doing and what amazing stories were coming out of their lives. And so they decide to go back. Verse 37 goes on to say, now Barnabas wanted to take with them John called Mark. So they're going. They've made the decision. They agree. It's a great idea. We're going to go back. We're going to visit the towns and the churches that we planted at the last missionary journey. Verse 37. Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John called Mark, but Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. So you find out, and if you think back in chapter 13 in verse 13, I'll turn there quick. You don't have to. I'll just read it for you. Beginning in chapter 13, now Paul and his companions set sail for Paphos and came to Perga in Pamphylia, and John left them and returned to Jerusalem. So here's a guy that is sent from them out of Antioch on the first missionary journey, and he's there for a few of the stops, and you know what? The going gets hard, and he bails. He's like, this is not what I signed on for. This is not what I thought it was going to be. I'm out of here. So in the middle of the first missionary journey, John Mark bails. And now they're getting ready to go on their second missionary journey, a second lap around, and it's kind of like a victory lap. I mean, this is an exciting trip for them. They're going back to the churches that they've started to see the growth and to be welcomed in as those that kind of got the ball rolling in those towns. And Barnabas wants to give John Mark a second chance. And Paul's like, absolutely not. He bailed on us once. We don't want people like him with us. We don't want people that are going to bail when the going gets hard. Now he wants to come on the victory lap. Now he wants to come back to those cities and be welcomed in. So they have this disagreement. And it's interesting. It's interesting that Paul is unwilling to give him a second chance when you think about it. Because wasn't it Barnabas back in chapter 9 that stands up on behalf of Paul? And stretches his neck out and Barnabas puts his own name on the line to get Paul to have a second chance. It's back in chapter 9, in verse 26 through 28. I'll flip there. You don't have to unless you want to. Chapter 9 and verse 26. And when he had come to Jerusalem, so Paul, he meets God on Damascus Road, makes it into Damascus, is converted, becomes a lover of Christ. He's no longer far from God. He's ministering, he's doing mighty things in Damascus. He whips up trouble because they don't want to hear about Jesus. They drive him out and he's heading to Jerusalem. He gets to Jerusalem. And that's where we are. So verse 26. When he came to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples, and they were afraid of him, for they did not believe that he was a disciple. Shocker. This is Saul, the persecutor, the guy that was dragging Christians off and putting them in prison. And now he's coming saying he's a Christian? I don't think so. I don't think so, Saul. Nice try. You're a smart guy, but it's not going to work. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared to them how on the road he had seen the Lord, who spoke to him, and how at Damascus he had preached boldly in the name of Jesus. So he went in and out among them at Jerusalem, preaching boldly in the name of the Lord. Barnabas stands up in Jerusalem and demands that the believers there give Paul a second chance. And now they're getting ready to go on this incredible journey, and John Mark is asking for a second chance. And Barnabas stands up and says, I want him to have a second chance. And Paul says, absolutely not. Isn't it amazing how hard it is sometimes for us to extend grace? Why is it always difficult and more difficult for us to extend grace for those that we love the most? It's amazing how hard it is to be forgiving by the people, to be forgiving to the people that are closest to us. And it should be the opposite. So we see Paul, the ultimate story of second chances, Paul, refusing John Mark a second chance. Chapter 15 goes on in verse 39. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. So they are so adamant. Barnabas is so set on giving John Mark a second chance, and Paul is so set on not allowing that second chance to happen, that they part ways. In fact, the term here, it says sharp agreement, is what my translation says. The same Greek terminology that was used in here, it was a very strong term. It was a term that meant unrelenting rejection. It involved just anger and irritation and contempt. I mean, this was a serious, serious conflict. In fact, the same term that was used there for strong disagreement is a Greek word used in other parts of the New Testament for God's wrath. I mean, this is a very, very tense moment between two Christian brothers, and they decide to go their own ways. And it's interesting, just a side note to this, up until this point, Barnabas was the senior officer, if you will. Barnabas was in charge. He was the leader on the first missions trip. This is actually marks Paul's graduation. So at the moment that they separate, Barnabas is now head over his own mission, his own ministry, and now Paul has split off and become the head of this missionary journey. And immediately we see Paul begin to build his team. Verse 40 and 41. Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of God, and he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. So Paul immediately breaks away from Barnabas. He's going to go on. He's going to go on the second missionary journey. He's going to visit the churches that they went to first. And now he's building his team. And so he grabs this guy named Silas. And if you remember a few weeks ago, we were introduced to Silas. Silas and Judas, other Judas, not Judas Iscariot, deliver a letter, an apostolic letter to Jerusalem. And that's when Paul came into first contact with them. And right off the bat, Paul and Silas recognize that they are just their kindred spirits. Their philosophies of ministry were the same. And so Paul grabs Silas to bring with him on the second missionary journey. He doesn't want John Mark, he wants Silas. Silas was also a very strategic choice for Paul, because Silas was a leading member of the Jerusalem church. And you gotta remember, Paul is still not like a super liked, trusted guy at this point. I mean, a lot of the people throughout those cities still didn't believe that his conversion was real. They still saw him as Saul, the persecutor, not Paul, the apostle. There were those sects of Christians that were just positive that he was just infiltrating the church and then he was going to backstab them and drag them all off to jail. So having a lead member of the Jerusalem church was a very strategic choice on Paul's part. Silas is also a Roman citizen, just like Paul was. Roman citizens in that time had special rights. They had special protections on the road. So this was kind of a dream team. Paul picked somebody that was a very strategic, good choice for this specific mission. And then they head off on their journey. In the beginning of chapter 16, the first half, just the beginning of verse 1, it said, Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. Now stop right there for a second in verse 1 and just give you kind of an idea of what that meant. Lystra was 150 miles away. So this wasn't like we're going to go check out the church in Minetto. So we'll take a half a day and we'll go check them out. And then maybe we'll take another half a day and walk up to Oswego. This first stop, Derbe and Lystra were right next to each other. They were like sister cities. Their first stop is 150 miles away. That's like put on your sandals. We're walking to Buffalo to check on a church that's going on. That's the equivalent. Buffalo's 150 miles away. So these two guys get on the road. And do you think it's possible that Paul did a lot of thinking in that 150-mile hike to Lystra? Do you think it's possible that he started doing some business with God, considering the fact that he chose to deny someone a second choice, chance? Paul, the king of second chances. I think he had some time to think about it. Another thing about Lystra, just 2 weeks ago, the story about Paul, it was in Lystra that he raised a cripple, and the people saw the miracle, and if you remember, they started hailing him as God or the Son of God, and they started bringing out bulls and worshiping him. And he had to shut it down. He's like, no, listen, I'll tell you who to worship, but it's not me. Stop it. Put it away. Like, put the sacrificial things, like, I'm not the one that you're supposed to be worshiping. Let me tell you about it. And at that moment, the Jews come in, and they're angry for a whole, and they're angry because he's preaching about Jesus. And so they whip the crowd into a frenzy, and Paul gets grabbed and drug out of the city and stoned and left for dead. That's Lystra. And if you remember from that message, he stands up after they left him for dead, thought he was dead, having just stoned him, he stands up and walks back into the city. What unbelievable drive, what unbelievable courage he had. What was compelling him? What is so important in Lystra? Why is it his first stop? I think we're about to find out why he was willing to risk so much, why he was willing to go so far to that first stop. Verse 1 in chapter 16 goes on to say, a disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. We'll stop right there for a second. First of all, Timothy it's a Greek name. His father was Greek, and his name means honored by God. Interesting that a pagan would name their child something that meant honored by God. But there it is. So Timothy means honored by God. And we find out two other things. We find out that his mother was a Jewish believer. So a Jew that was a believer in Christ had converted to Christianity, and his father was a Greek. You're like, so what? Like, who cares? That's weird. Why would you introduce, hey, this is my wife, her father's French and her mother's Canadian? And people are like, okay, I don't understand. Who cares what his mother and father? Everybody cared. It's the first thing you find out about him, because this was a serious, serious problem for Timothy. In Deuteronomy, I'll just turn there, Deuteronomy 23 and verse 2. It talks about the consequences of a forbidden relationship or the consequences of a forbidden marriage. 23 verse 2. No one born of a forbidden union may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord. It was very, very clear that Jews were supposed to marry Jews. So when his Jewish mother marries or doesn't marry but conceives with a Greek, instantly the generational line is cut off from the Jewish church, from the Jewish tradition. It said down to the 10th generation. That's not literal. In the Hebrew, that was an expression for forever. So it's not like you got to count 10 generations and then you're welcome back into the church. Like if you have a kid, if you marry somebody outside of the Jewish religion, you're cut off forever. Timothy would not have been circumcised. He wouldn't have started his education at 5 like all of his peers. He wouldn't have been allowed in the synagogue. He wouldn't have been allowed in any kind of religious community whatsoever. He was a complete outcast. It's compounded by the fact that Timothy chose to take his mother's religion. To the Greeks, you were to take your father's religion. So when he is born to a Greek, he would have actually been fine. They didn't care that his mother was a Jew. If he'd chosen his father's religion, he would have been welcomed into the Greek society with open arms, but he chose his mother's religion. So he was rejected by the Greeks. So here's a boy that he never had a shot. I mean, this kid didn't have a chance to begin with. He's rejected by the people he grew up with, the Jews. He's rejected by his father's people that are the Greeks. He's got nowhere to go. It was such an outrage to the Jews, actually had a word for it. And it was mumzer, which just meant like half-blood or outsider, or it was a derogatory term that they used for those that were the result of a forbidden marriage, that were cast out of their society, cast out of their synagogues. Now it's interesting, because here is a boy that would not have been circumcised, he wouldn't have been welcomed with the body, he would not have had a Jewish education. Yet we find out through the text and through history, he was extremely wise. He had an unbelievable knowledge of the Torah. He was very educated for having not been allowed in the synagogue. And historians really only have one explanation for it, because remember, the women were not educated in that day and age. So he couldn't have just learned it from his mother or learned it from his grandmother. It was highly, highly, highly unlikely that they would have been able to afford a scroll that he would have been able to study at home. Only the wealthiest of the wealthiest of the wealthiest could afford a handwritten version of the Torah. The only explanation that historians have is that Timothy must have literally sat outside the door of the synagogue and listened to the rabbis as they taught. So committed to a world that he wasn't even welcome in. And now we find that he has come to faith in Jesus. Goes on in verse 2. It says he was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. So we find out that finally he has found a place amongst the Christians, amongst the born-again believers in that town. He's finally fitting in. And not only is he fitting in, but he's getting good report from these Christian leaders in the churches of Lystra and Iconium. I think it's pretty clear why Paul was drawn to Lystra. I think he was there for Timothy. I think he wanted to give somebody a second chance. After 150 miles, after weeks on the road, thinking about maybe how he could have handled the whole John Mark thing a little bit different, he remembers this little boy from Lystra that 2 or 3 years ago gave his life to Jesus. This little mumser boy that never had a shot in the world, and Paul wanted to give him that shot. There's a very high likelihood that Timothy was there when Paul was drugged from the city and stoned. Imagine this boy of 8 or 9 or 10, 11 years old watching his hero drug through the gates and left for dead. And now Paul has returned for him. In 1 Timothy 1:2, Paul actually refers to Timothy as his true son. In 2 Timothy 1:2, he refers to him as his dear son. There was a very special relationship that happened. So Paul walks 150 miles and tracks down this little mumser boy to give him a second chance. Verse 3, it goes on to say, Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. So clarification, because didn't we just say last week that the believers that were Gentiles didn't have to be circumcised in order to be saved? Yes, and that's not what this is talking about. Paul did not circumcise Timothy unto salvation. He sacrificed him for service. He circumcised him for the mission. Because here's the reality. Paul, his overarching understanding was very clear. Paul knew Christ had come to fulfill the law. He was no longer under the law. He talks about it 1,000 times. But Paul also had a very, very strong sensitivity to the fact that he's ministering to a mixed community. And the fact that Timothy was not circumcised would have been a serious problem to the Jews. Even though it wasn't a problem to God, he recognized it would be a serious problem to the Jews. I think Paul probably puts it best in 1 Corinthians 9:19 through 23. I'll just turn there quick. You don't have to. When Paul says, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, lo, not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside of the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside of the Christ. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some." And it's a pretty cool demonstration on Timothy's part as well. We find out from this passage it's Timothy's choice to get circumcised, to allow it, which means two things. Number one, it means Timothy was at least 13 years of age, because up until the point that a Jewish child was 13, it was the parents' choice. As soon as they turned 13, it became the child's choice. So here's Timothy, at least 13 years of age, making the decision, a painful, literally painful decision, for the sake of the mission. In order for them to be more effective on this trip, in order to reach more, he's willing to undergo a medical procedure. Right out of the gates, we see the sacrifice for the mission on Timothy's part. Verse 4 and 5. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. God uses Paul. God uses Silas and Timothy in mighty ways to strengthen the churches. It is an incredible story of grace. It is an incredible story of second chances on Timothy's part. He was so unqualified. He was so undesired. He was so unlikely. He's exactly who Jesus would have chosen. Paul chose as Jesus chose. He looked into the heart of Timothy and saw someone that was going to be used mightily for God. These stories are also confront us. They also confront us with an unbelievable contrast. John Mark, he's part of the team. He's Barnabas's cousin. He's one of the guys. And you know what? He made a mistake. He made a mistake. He went home. He lost heart. He had no second chance. And then you see Paul reaching out to Timothy in such a supernatural, extraordinary, superhuman way. Reaching out to this mumser kid who had been rejected and estranged and showing unbelievable grace to give this kid a second chance. These stories are a reminder of how hard it is to give grace to the people in our lives that we love the most. And maybe it's because we expect more from them. Maybe it's because they're the ones that can cut us the deepest. They're the ones that can hurt us the most. Maybe it's just because we selfishly think that we deserve more from them than they are able to give. Was an incredibly hard message to prepare for, especially considering it like required two very hard conversations with my mother. Because it's a relationship that's been broken for a very long time. And in order to stand here and talk about grace, and to talk about second chances, I needed a second chance first. And I am so thankful that God is not done with me yet. And I am so thankful that I came to this now. How many times do we go our entire lives with a broken relationship that we never fix because we get in our own way? What other people are there in my life that I refuse to give a second chance? We are fortunate to have a God that is never done with us, that is never done giving us second chances, that is never done recreating things in us. And God wasn't done with Paul and Silas and Barnabas and Timothy either. All through the rest of the book of Acts and in other stories throughout the New Testament, we find that they have reconciled and they are doing mighty things for God and they're working together as brothers in the faith. I'm thankful for second chances this morning. As the band comes up, let's go ahead and close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for second chances, for unlimited second chances. Thank you for the opportunities to repair what we have broken. We thank you for the grace and the mercy and the strength that you give us that enable us to show grace to others. I pray, Lord, that you would make us passionate about second chances, that you would make us passionate about grace. There is no one that has shown more grace and demonstrated more grace than you have for us. How dare we stand here forgiven and not forgive? We love and we thank you so much. In Jesus' name.